The Gestalt Gardener podcast is brought to you by Varicosity Vein Center, providing health assessment screenings and compassionate care to improve your vascular functionality and quality of life. Our doctors and vein specialists offer solutions to painful varicose veins, spider veins, and other venous diseases to our patients. Now offering complimentary vein screenings in Jackson, Madison, and Ridgeland. Information and appointment scheduling at varicosityveincenter.com.
Good morning. Good morning. Ain't it a great morning outside? If you're a gardener, of course, we always have hope. Hey, y'all, I'm horticulturist Felder Rushing, and you've tuned in to Mississippi Public Broadcasting's Gestalt Gardener program. It's a live party, folks. If you got some things that are on your mind about gardening, lawn care, planting, tree shrubs, wildflowers, bugs, blights, any of that kind of stuff, we'll talk about it, and that's what we'll do. We won't try to sell you anything. We'll just talk about it. I got a couple of events coming up soon some of you may be interested in. Got a little bit of cheesy music to kind of cheer us up in these weird days at the end of January. But other than that, we're going to take a little break for some news and come back and talk with you live. Get ready to give us a call, folks. If you want to, join us and we'll all get dirty.
This is an MPB Think Radio podcast.
Okie dokie, folks. Welcome back. Horticulture's Felder Rushing. And for the next hour or so, we're just going to talk about gardening. I hope you've got some stuff you'd like to talk about because that's what we're here for. It's a party, and it's just real informal. Doesn't matter who you are or who your mom and them are, what your skills are, what you really are interested or not interested in doing. What can I help you with? Or what can you share with us? Give us a call. It's toll-free 1-877-MPB-RING. You can figure those numbers out, but the first one's MPB, stands for Mississippi Public Broadcasting. And me and Job and all the other folks here at MPB look forward to yakking with you. So give us a call. We've got the lines wide open. And here it is, the very end of January. Can't get more end of January than this. It's going to be spring before we know it, believe it or not. I've been getting emails all week about people who have weeds in their lawns, want to know what to do. And I'm glad that they're asking right now because this is sort of towards the end of when you can do anything about them. A whole lot of people give us a call in March and April saying we got a bunch of clover or dandelions or henbitters just killing all our stuff. It's too late to spray then. Once the weeds are big and flowering, the weed killers don't work as well. And the closer you get towards spring, the more likely the weed killer can damage your lawn. Even grass can tolerate herbicides. If you spray when it's greening up, it's really, really sensitive. So if you don't like what I call meadow garden, meadow lawns, wildflowers, weeds, whatever you want to call them, if you want to get rid of them and you want to spray, this is the time to do it. Don't wait, because I can't help you a month from now. So anyway, if there's some things you'd like to kick around along those lines, I'm in favor of meadow lawns. I love clover and dandelions and henbits and the bees and the butterflies, and I think they're pretty, and when you mow them, they're gone for the summer anyway. But if you want to do something about it, give me a call and let's talk about it. Again, I've got the lines open, but let's start out down in Natchez and talk with Francis. Good morning, Francis.
Thanks for having me.
Sure, what's up?
I got a question. When I was small, I used to eat the berries on an Illy Agnus bush. About the size of a red bean, kiwi fruit in cover, you know, kind of like hairy, like, and it tastes pretty good. Well, I was out hunting a few years ago, and I saw an Illy Agnus bush in the woods. I dug several of them up and brought them and planted them in my yard. For the first time, about 3 months ago, one of the plants actually bloomed. And out of all of the flowers in my yard, this is the first one that really attracted honeybees. All the rest of them, bees were pollinating them. But my question is, I never have been able to get any fruit on a tree. What's wrong?
Well, a couple of things. Is this a kind of Illy Agnus that grows big, long, sprawly branches like it needs a haircut every other month?
Yes, sir.
That one. And by the way, there is a relative of Illy Agnus called Gummy Berry that's grown for its fruit. But the regular Eleagnus, when it blooms, typically in late November, first part of December, it's really fragrant. I mean, you can smell it half a block away. And the berries are a little, they're shaped like little, you know, they're not like bananas, but they're long and skinny, about the size of the last digit of your little finger. And they're perfectly edible. As far as what makes them bloom, they're not male and female. So, you know, one plant can make flowers and berries. So the only thing I can suggest, if you're pruning it, don't. You know, from the middle of the summer on, leave it alone because it blooms on the new growth and it has to have time. So if you're shaping it up like a bush, there go your flowers. But other than that, you know, it's just, I guess, kind of the luck of the draw. It's a wonderful fragrant plant and a perfectly edible one in December, early January.
Yes, it's better than, I used to think that the sweet olive tree was the best smell in this bush in my yard until I smelled this Eleagnus.
Well, you know, what's really weird is they both bloom close at the same time, and it could be real, you know, I walk a lot. I walk around an older neighborhood, and both of them bloom pretty much about the same time, and it can really, I mean, it can make you dizzy. But anyway, yeah, a lot of people don't really like the plant because it gets big, but consider this. This is what I've done in my back garden. Along my back fence, I've got some tree-form shrubs. And what I've done is I planted some Eleagnus, and it's actually, believe it or not, it's a vine. If you plant it near some stuff, it can grow up in a tree and come cascading down. I've seen it 20 feet tall and cascading back down, completely full of flowers. So think about, you know, it using, instead of a shrub that has to be pruned all the time, think of it as a vine and see if you can plant it someplace where it can grow on it.
Oh, okay. Well, thanks a lot, Felder.
I will say this, you were raised right.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Thanks, Francis. You bet.
All right. Bye-bye.
Okay, that was Francis from down in Natchez. If you've got some things you'd like to chat about, if you got some memories from your childhood and want to drag them back up, you know, a lot of young people are getting interested in gardening. And believe it or not, here's how it's happening. They're doing it with container plants, with potted plants. A lot of younger people don't have the, you know, they move around a lot. They, you know, they, I'm not going to say not, you know, the millennium thing is takes too much time. Unlike a little pet rabbit or a snake or a tarantula or a kitten or something like that, a potted plant doesn't need a bunch of care, but it's a connection with nature. And a lot of people are hungry for that, especially kids raised with computer screens and handheld electronic devices. A simple potted plant, an easy, durable potted plant, minimum attention, can make a really nice little gift for a fairly young person. And plus, if they're poor, it substitutes as furniture. Anyway, if you want to chat about that, give me a call, toll-free 1-877-MPB-RING. Let's slide up to Jackson. Hey, Allison, thanks for calling.
Thank you so much for taking my call.
Yeah.
Very timely comment. You just said, I don't know anything about gardening. I've never planted one thing in my life, but I have two girls ages 7 and 11, and they want to, quote-unquote, plant something. And
great.
So, and I don't know if they want to do it right now. And so
okay.
What do we do?
Okay. First of all, are we talking about indoors or outdoors or either or both?
Outdoors. And it varies. Sometimes when we talk about it, they picture food and vegetables. Sometimes it's flowers. So this is a wide open comment and more about the connection with nature, you said, and just kind of more like,
yeah,
what will be fun for this time of year.
Here's an ideal thing. And by the way, you're not alone. A lot of people our age were not raised by parents and grandparents who gardened, and even younger, you know, further and further away from gardening. So a lot of parents weren't really raised by gardeners, don't know. So why don't you and the girls learn together? Okay,
yeah.
And here's an easy thing to do. Take them to a garden center or box store or whatever and get a big pot, big enough to where you can't put your arms around it. Okay, that big. It could be anything. You could even use some old 5-gallon milk, 5-gallon paint buckets with holes drilled in the bottom. But anyway, some pretty good sized pots and fill them with some pretty good potting soil. You know, not just cheap stuff, but some pretty good stuff. And then in each one of them, plant 2 or 3 or 4 different things, including a flower, And, you know, right now there's plenty of things like pansies and violas and snapdragons that'll bloom perfectly well from now up till spring. Then they can replace it with something later. But there's some things that bloom in the summer. But also little things like kale, K-A-L-E, it's a pretty plant, but they can break leaves off and chop it up and mix it into soup and stuff. But also the easiest things for children to learn are things that don't need time, something gives instant gratification, and nothing beats something like oregano or rosemary or in the summertime basil. They're pretty, they're easy to grow, they don't need a bunch of care, and the kids can snip leaves off and put them in soups and chili and stews, and they'll have food ownership without having to wait for something like a tomato, which may not make it. So culinary herbs, a couple of flowers, and there's some that do well in the wintertime, and then if one of them dies, you just take it back, pull it up, go back and get something about that same size and stick it in the hole, and just sort of a recycle thing. So I would stick with culinary herbs, oregano, rosemary. When it gets a little bit warmer, basil. Those are really, really easy for kids to use on pizza and on spaghettis, and then any kind of little flower that looks pretty. And get this, if you use like an inexpensive container, like a 5-gallon milk jug, get them to paint or decorate the containers to personalize them.
You made my day. This is my last time.
You could.
Do they all take the same amount of care a little bit, so you don't have to worry about, oh, I water one thing one time and I water this thing another day? It's all the same.
Pretty much are all about the same. When my daughter first flew the nest and lived in an apartment, her boyfriend thought she was an unbelievable chef because she had a 5-gallon bucket and a rosemary, an oregano, and a basil in it. And he thought she was a goddess. And all she did was water them when they got really, really dry. That's it. And the more you snip them, the more they bush out. So anyway, they're easy to start with. Also, get just a little bit of what they call time-released or slow-release fertilizer, the little bead things. Mix it in the dirt so that that feeds them for the whole year. You don't have to worry about that kind of stuff. And just water when they get dry.
Okay, you just changed our lives, and I really kind of mean that. Thank you.
Okay, you bet. Hey, send me a picture. You do one along with them. So three of y'all are each doing your own little thing.
Awesome. Thank you.
Have fun. That's okay. It. Have fun. All right. There's a lot of good ways to involve kids with gardening, but things that take a long time don't always work because kids don't understand time. Another easy thing to do is get them to mix a pinch of two or three different lettuce seeds together and start little pots of lettuce salads. They're easy, they're fast, and you harvest them before they have a chance to die. So anyway, give me a call, folks. We got the lines wide open. Toll-free 1-877-MPB-RING. I'm horticulturist Felder Rushing. We're going to come back with your phone calls and also a couple of events coming up you might be interested in. Stick with us, folks. Here at Mississippi Public Broadcasting, me and Java and all the other folks at MPB, we're sitting here waiting. Let's have some fun.
I'm Dr. Jimmy Stewart, Professor of Internal Medicine and Pediatrics at the University of Mississippi Medical Center. On the Original Southern Remedy, we answer questions about all aspects of your health and share some of the latest medical information in the news. You can listen to the show on Wednesdays at 11 on MPB Think Radio, or you can subscribe to the podcast by searching for Southern Remedy on your preferred podcasting app.
Alrighty, folks, welcome back. Horticulturist Felder Rushing. A couple of events coming up. Nothing this weekend that I have. Usually they have a rose pruning thing at the Greenwood Cemetery downtown Jackson the first weekend in February, but they moved it to the second weekend in February. So the rose pruning and rooting demonstration and all the cuttings you'd like from the roses at the shrub roses at Greenwood Cemetery, which is downtown Jackson, is going to be next Saturday, February the 8th. Bring some loppers and pruning shears if you got them, and little plastic bags, maybe a Sharpie pen so you can label what you get. But it's free, it's fun, it's easy, and you'll have a good time. I don't have anything else on my calendar until a home fruit production talk, how to choose the right types and the right varieties of fruits that double as landscape plants. This could be at Hutto's Garden Center in Jackson on Saturday, February the 15th. Don't have anything else. If there's something I can help promote, shoot me an email and let's yak about it. Meanwhile, let's slide up to the northeast Mississippi to Tupelo. Hey, Ben, good morning.
Hey, good morning. How are you doing this morning?
So far, not so bad.
Good deal, good deal. Hey, I was calling in. I was want to know if you could give me a little bit of direction. My wife and I purchased a property back this past year, and it has no trees on it whatsoever. And I've always been around trees, but I never had to actually go in and plant them. So we're looking at doing that, and I was just want to ask you. I'll give you a few that we mentioned, and you can kind of tell me what you think about getting them planted this time of the year. My wife purchased, we haven't received it yet, she wanted to do an elm tree in the backyard, and I was going to dig up some dogwoods, and we also talked about maple and pin oak. What is the timeline before spring to get those planted?
Okay, these are good questions. Let me throw out a couple of general things first. And the number one, you're not going to believe, but it's absolutely true. I've been planting trees all of my life, not just for me, but for civic groups and Habitat for Humanity and schools and all like that. But a little tree will get established better and outgrow a bigger tree every single time. I wouldn't think in my own personal yard about planting a tree much taller than me, but one that's between knee high and waist high will almost double in size, where one that's head high will sit there till it gets established. So little trees will always outgrow a bigger tree. The key is dig a wide hole, not a deep hole, and when you move it, make sure you dug the hole first so you can dig it up, move it, stick it in the hole, water it, walk away from it. But a little hole in a little tree in a wide hole will always outperform a bigger tree. If you do get a bigger tree, like from a garden center, it's real important to loosen up the potting soil and some of the roots and mix that with your dirt so it's not growing in a little socket of potting soil and then your dirt. Always loosen up the roots and potting soil. And those are the most important things to keep in mind. Now, as far as the ones you mentioned, you know, be sure, Google pin oak before you pick one out, because a lot of people call willow oaks pin oaks. They got willow oaks that have leaves shaped like your little finger. That's mm-hmm. A lot of people call those pin oaks. But any of the oaks are going to do fine. The elm tree should do fine. If you want a good little dependable tree, look for one at a garden center called Drake Elm. Some people call it Drake Elm. It's a pretty little fast-growing tree with great bark. And as far as the dogwoods, of all the trees that are planted in Mississippi every single year, of all the dogwoods planted, only about one out of every three is going to be there 5 years later. They have a real low success rate. So do this. Get the smallest ones you can find, loosen up the roots, and when you plant them, mix in some dirt that you dug up from a big dogwood tree someplace, because there's this special stuff that grows on dogwood roots. I don't want to get into it. It's called mycorrhizae, but it helps dogwoods grow better, and it doesn't come in potting soil. So get you some dogwood dirt from under dogwood tree, mix it in, and then set your little dogwood out there.
Okay.
Anyway, also, if you'll shoot me an email, I'll send you a list of some really, really good dependable trees for the Tupelo area. It's a free list. But keep this in mind. Trees grow better in the forest than in the prairie. In other words, don't just stick a tree here and there out in the lawn. Plant a group of trees, two or three different kinds, and then mulch the whole area so the roots think they're out in the woods, and the lawnmower won't hit them. But don't just stick a tree here and there. Put groups of trees, a little bit more space between them than you feel comfortable with, because trust me, they're going to grow together. So groups of trees here and there with mulch, you know, bark or something, instead of grass growing up right to them, and it's going to be fantastic. Fantastic.
Okay. One more question. If what about, I've always heard, you know, you need to get them planted in in the wintertime because of the sap. If we get them planted by February, should they, as far as they go, should they be okay?
Yeah, the trees set out in the fall and the wintertime have chance to sort of settle down. The roots actually grow, you know, the tops may be dormant, but the roots actually grow. But they'll get established and settle in before summertime. If you wait till spring or summer, they're all leafed out, they're under more stress, they need more water, and that causes its own problems. So anytime in the winter is fine. Matter of fact, February is usually, you know, we got Arbor Day coming up. You might even check with the Extension Service or the Soil Conservation Service, check with either of those in they're in Lee County and see if they don't have a free tree program. A lot of them have little bundles of trees for home gardeners, and they're little things. But I've set out these little seedlings that were about knee-high when I planted them. I'll give you an example. One February, my son was born in February, we planted trees that were about knee-high when he was born. I did. When he was 4 years old, we both fell out of one of them. That's how well they grow. Okay. Anyway, check with the Extension Service to see if they or another agency has a tree program sometime this month.
Okay, good deal. Thank you.
Shoot me an email, man. Appreciate it. All righty. Yeah, that's fun. You know, we really need to talk more about planting trees, but there's just not much to it. All I can do is say go for it. Go for it if you can. Before we take this next call, let me throw this out. Java, I know you're not feeling that great, but I got to ask you, have you ever heard of a fellow who just died? He's 104 years old and he just died. I'm trying to find his name because I can't remember the whole thing. You know, I would go
104 years
anyway,
old.
Here we go. 104 years old, born in 1916. His name was Bartholomew Richard Fitzgerald Smith, born in 1916. Ever hear of him?
Not to my knowledge.
Okay, I'll give you a hint. He always wore a top hat. He had white gloves. He had shoe spats and a monocle. Still don't recognize him.
Oh, you're talking about Mr. Peanut?
Mr. Peanut, planter peanut guy. He died this week. Rescuing a couple of friends. You'll see it on a Super Bowl ad.
Yeah, I saw that. That's gonna be crazy.
Hey, you know, I'm just letting you know I'm keeping up with current events, my friend.
Mr. Pop Culture.
There you go. Hey, let's slide back down to Madison to talk with Mike. Hey, Mike, thank you for calling.
Good morning, Felder.
Hey, what's up?
I have recently moved to Madison, and my yard does not have a fig tree. And I need to get some advice, some hands-on sort of advice about what to do about that. I need to get that fig tree. It will bear fig.
Okay. Okay. A couple of. First of all, keep in mind that a fig tree is hard to pick. If I had to have one fruit in the South, it'd be figs because you can eat them, but also you can put them up, and you can't buy fig preserves that are worth anything. It's all sugar. Here, a couple of things. They need a wide hole. They need a little bit of stuff added to your dirt because Madison's got okay dirt, but it's a lot of clay. But add a little bit of stuff to your dirt, like a handful of crackers to a big bowl of chili. Dig a wide hole, and then when you get a fig tree, loosen the roots up and then plant it a little bit on the high side, sort of like on a little low mound, 4 or 5 inches high in the middle, so it has extra drainage in the wintertime. Now, they don't like flat dirt that stays wet all winter. So a little bit of a mound, and then cover it with a lot of tree leaves and barks and stuff. Okay, that's how you plant it. The thing to keep in mind is when you plant a fig, I don't care how much it costs, I don't care how big it was, cut it back to about knee high. Because what will happen is instead of getting long and tall, it will branch out this year. And sometime middle of the summer, snip the tips off those branches, and they will bush out. And you'll have a fig bush that has more figs that are easier to pick. Every year I go in and cut whatever grew last year, I cut it back about halfway. And that keeps mine compact, it's thick, it's full, about the size of a Volkswagen on a stick, and you can pick it. My main thing is cut it back about knee-high, no matter how much it costs. And then the last thing is there's a lot of different varieties out there. I think that the best producer is one that's called Celeste, like Celestial. Starts with a C-E. Celeste is the most dependable producer. Plant at least one of those. If you want to stick out a brown turkey or a Kazari fig or anything else, make sure you start with the Celeste because it's going to be the one you can depend on.
Okay. Where am I going with the fig tree?
Most of the garden centers sell them, you know, just make sure you, okay, you're in the Jackson area. In 2 weeks, I'm giving a home fruit seminar. I do it every year at a place called Hutto's. Have you ever heard of it?
What's the name of it?
H-U-T-T-O, Hutto's. Now, most garden centers carry these kind of things, but Hutto's specializes in fruit varieties for the Deep South, and they'll have some there. But anyway, wherever you go, if it's not Celeste, if it's turkey or brown turkey, that's going to be a gamble. That's the most popular one, but sometimes it makes, sometimes it doesn't. So anyway, that's a start. There's also one called Kazeri that starts with a K. It's sold by a guy named Don Kazeri, who lives out in Clinton. It came from his dad named Kazeri because it came from their old homeland. It makes figs of the size of lemons, and they're like made out of honey. But I would still start with a Celeste, a wide hole, cut it back knee high.
Thanks for the advice.
That's a good start. Shoot me an email if you need some more. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much.
Oh, boy. A lot of stuff about figs. I like figs as landscape shrubs, good coarse-textured plants. They look nice. If they make figs, that's great. But if you really want one, keep in mind a big fig bush is a whole lot more productive and easier to pick than a small fig tree. So just think of them as bushes. If you got a fig plant, go out sometime this next 2 or 3 or 4 weeks. Cut everything back that grew last year about halfway. It'll bush out, have figs on that new growth. We got a cheesy tune. It's not so much cheesy. It's just everybody's so up in the air. People are arguing about stuff, and people are mad. And it's just, it'll get you down. So I chose a tune that I play every now and then when I need some comfort food. So we're going to do that. We're going to come back with your more phone calls here on Mississippi Public Broadcasting. Me and Job and all the folks at MPB, we appreciate the opportunity to share with y'all. Gonna take a little break, but got the lines wide open. If you want to give me a call, toll free 1-877-MPB-RING, or shoot me an email. I'm online right now, garden@mpbonline.org. We'll be right back after a relaxing tune right after this. I'm horticulturist Felder Rushing. See you in a minute.
Some things in life are bad, they can really make you mad. Other things just make you swear and curse. When you're chewing on life's gristle, that grumble, give a whistle. And this'll help things turn out for the best. And always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the light side of life. If life seems jolly rotten, there's something you've forgotten, and that's to laugh and smile and dance and sing. When you're feeling in the dumps, don't be silly chumps, just purse your lips and whistle, that's the thing. Hey.
Always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the bright side of life.
For life is quite absurd, and death's the final word. You must always face the curtain with a bow. Forget about your scene, give the audience a grin. Enjoy it, it's your last chance anyhow.
So always look on the bright side of death.
You look at it, life's a laugh and death's a joke, it's true. You'll see it's all a show, keep them laughing as you go. Just remember that the last laugh is on you. And
always look on the bright side of life.
Deep South Dining is the show all about the culture of Southern flavor. From fried chicken and collard greens to shrimp and grits and a glass of sweet tea. Subscribe now to the podcast using any podcast app or download our MPB public media app.
¶¶
Alrighty, folks, welcome back. Horticulturist Phil Rushing. I've got a couple of lines open if you want to give us a call. Before we go to this first call, let me mention this, that last week I interviewed a couple of women who started a very informal, hugely successful plant swap over in Sheffield, England. It's the oldest running plant swap in England. Of course, the oldest one in the known universe is in Flora, Mississippi, which we'll have more about that in April. And there's one down in Mobile. We always enjoy the Mobile and the Flora plant swaps. But if you want more information about plant swaps, what goes on, how it happens, and some funny pictures and anecdotes, go to my my blog, Felder Rushing blog. I just re-updated, added stuff from the English one to show some pictures, and it's got a little bit of an interview with these women who started. I think you'll have a blast. Felder Rushing blog, and just either the very first blog, or else just type in the thing, plant swap. Anyway, I enjoy doing stuff like that. Now let's go to Madison and talk with Avery. Morning, Avery.
Good morning, Felder. My question is it possible to have viable chestnut trees in Mississippi? I've read a lot about it. I'm just wondering if it's possible to grow chestnut trees successfully, and where would I go to select some if it is?
Oh, well, first of all, yes, we can grow chestnuts in a couple of different kinds. I don't remember the best varieties for them, but I know that they grow well. They grow better up in northeast Mississippi, all the way up in Canada. You know, they're not so much Gulf Coast natives, but they'll grow perfectly well. It shouldn't have any problem at all. As far as the best place to get them, I don't know any garden centers locally that carry chestnuts. So you'd have to go online and order some. I might want to check around, you know, call. I'll check with the folks in a couple of weeks when I'm doing the home fruit seminar at Hutto's, whether they have any or can get any. But anyway, to answer your question, yes, they will grow here. They take a while unless they're grafted, because trees grown from seeds take anywhere from 7, 8, 10 years or more to mature. You know, same thing with pecan trees. But if you get one that's been grafted, they graft mature wood onto a young rootstock so it can produce, you know, within 2 or 3 years or so. So those are just general things. Yeah, they'll grow. I'd look for a grafted variety, and that's about all I got to say right now. I can get more information for you, but just not off the top of my head.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Okay, good luck on it. Toll-free 1-877-MPB-RING. You want to give me a call? We're going to be talking about gardening, nothing but gardening for the next little while. I would like to say I got an email from a fellow. Let me see here. Where is it? Here we go, right here. This is from Avery. I think it's pronounced Thiesen. Anyway, I'm going to answer his question a little bit more in detail later, but he said his wife and he just bought a house, want to have a garden. But the main question he wanted to ask, he said, is there anything he should not compost? He said, I'm under the impression any kitchen food, the biodegradable items are fine. The truth is, anything that will rot will make good compost. Tree leaves, grass clippings, anything from the kitchen, vegetables, anything like that. Some people say you shouldn't put meat in a compost, excuse me, but I put a dead raccoon in mine and it did just fine. But anyway, in general, the stuff from the kitchen and grass clippings, the moist stuff that are kind of green or have color, they break down really quickly. And brown stuff like tree leaves and bark break down slowly. You mix the two together and you got a real good combination. I would recommend, if you're not familiar with composting, to don't worry about a compost bin. Have two bins side by side, little area side by side. Put some plastic or something on the ground to keep tree roots growing up in it, and just pile stuff up on one. And when it gets too tall, start piling stuff up on the other. And by the time the second one is full, you can start digging out the first one. Then you just go back and forth, filling one, digging out of one, then filling that one and digging out of the other. But two bins side by side, 3 or 4 feet square, work really well. The more different stuff you mix together, the better it works. And I'm real, real big on composting. If you want to have fast compost, we can win a race. I can help you. But if you just want to have a place to throw stuff and use it later, it's called a leaf pile. It works perfectly fine. Now let's slide up to Greenwood. Hey, Bill, thank you for calling. Hello, Bill. I can't tell if Bill is there or not. Yeah. Okay. Hey, Tom, where are you calling from? Where's Mantachie?
Oh, Mantachie is, I don't know, between Fulton and Tupelo. It's about halfway in between. We're about 15 miles from each.
Okay. Well, what's going on?
Well, I've had some azaleas growing in my yard for years, and they have never bloomed. And I just don't know what to do. If they don't bloom this year, I think I'm going to jerk them out of the ground and stick them on the compost pile.
Okay, now what kind of plant was it again?
Azaleas.
Azalea. Yeah, here's a couple of things. In general, when azaleas were first introduced to our part of the country in the 1850s, the horticulturist of the time says these plants are not really good for us. You know, they've never done great. In spite of the fact that they're one of the most popular planted shrub around, they're not dependable. And if they stay way too dry or way too wet or have a sudden hard freeze, it boogers them up. So in general, in your area of the woods, even though they're growing full sun on the coast, they do best if they get maybe morning sun, but protection from the heat of the day. They need a big hole with peat moss added to them. A lot of people don't do this, but they grow best. They're related to blueberries in that they have a real fibrous root. So if you could work a little peat moss in around the plants, as soon as they get through blooming this year, or whether they bloom or not, cut them back. That takes it reduces their size. It takes the stress off. The new growth will come out, and it'll be better balanced with the kind of roots that may have been damaged by the weather we've had the past few years. So pruning in the spring, early summer, a little bit of fertilizer, one or two good soakings over the summertime at the most, and that's about the best you can do. If you want to start over with some, get some little ones, loosen the roots up when you plant them so that they're not just a little wad of potting soil in your dirt. But to help them have a good root system, don't push them with too much water or fertilizer. A little bit of protection in the middle of the day, and they should do fine.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Felder. I was going to say, I really love your show. I listen to you as often as I can, and you're just a world of knowledge.
I'm a lazy gardener. I'm not giving the best advice. I'm giving my advice. But anyway, somewhere between what horticulturists tell you and what Aunt Mamie does is just right. You know what I'm saying?
There you go. Well, thank you very much, Felder. You have yourself a wonderful weekend.
Appreciate it. If you ask more questions about it, shoot me an email. I'll be glad to get more detail about it. And there's actually some different kinds of azaleas that are not the usual kind that they sell at garden centers that you can get are a whole lot more dependable. They're just not as popular. Garden centers tend to sell what people come in asking for rather than pushing new plants on you. So we got some really good plants. So give me a call back or shoot me an email.
All right. Well, thank you, sir. You have a great day.
Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate it. Now let's slide over to Leflore County and talk with Bill. Hey, Bill, what's going on? Bill hung up again, didn't he? Bill, your attention span is too short. Give us a call back and stay on the line. Okay. So, who in Meridian? Hey, Susan, good morning. Thank you for calling. Hello.
Hey. Howdy. I wanted to plant a star magnolia. My neighbor has one house behind me, and you know, it blooms this time of year.
Yep.
Where do I find one?
You know, star magnolia, and for people who don't know, you know, you and I know, star magnolia is almost like a big bush rather than a small tree. It's smaller than a dogwood, and they got real pretty big white flowers this time of year. And it's a great plant. By the way, it does better in a little bit of shade than in broiling hot sun in our part of the world. I'm just saying. As far as where you can get them, garden centers can get these plants with a normal shipment. You know, garden centers order plants, and you can say, will you put an order for a star magnolia in for me? And if they say they can't, ask them if they can recommend a place you can start shopping that will, because they can. See, I mean, they just put in with their regular orders. So anyway, if the, it's not going to be something normally sold, and the reason why is because they bloom at a time when customers don't come into the store, and when customers start coming to the store, it's just a bunch of sticks with leaves. So, you know, they don't sell themselves. So anyway, any garden center, local garden center, can get it for you. Otherwise, you might have to, if you shoot me an email, I might find a place somewhere nearby. But in general, any locally grown garden center, locally owned garden center, can get you one. Good plant.
My neighbor has one that's lived for years, and it's about the size of a small dogwood tree. It's a small tree.
Yeah. Yeah, a small dogwood, but you never see one. And there's a big dog. What I'm saying is a lot of people call it a tree. It is a tree, but it's a small, what we call a small tree. Sort of like a crepe myrtle is really a large shrub rather than a small tree, but they get tree size. So anyway, it's a dogwood size at the most.
Blooming right now.
Yeah, it's a great plant. Great, great, great plant. It's one at the in-between time when other than the flowering quince, there's not much else out there. It's a great one.
It is. It's beautiful. Thank you.
Okay, appreciate your call. Now let's slide up to Bradley in Tupelo. Hey, Bradley.
Hi.
Howdy. What's going on? Catch you by surprise?
No, a little bit. I was listening to the show there through my phone.
we have a little delay in case somebody says something bad. We got to cut off so Mama doesn't hear it.
You don't have to worry about that with me. I'm new to the rural South. I'm from up north, and last summer I had a real problem with fleas. Is there a way, you know, to kind of prevent?
You said fleas, right?
Correct, sir. It's a little embarrassing.
No. That's okay. It's okay. Here's the deal with fleas. They have a four-part life, and it really does help to know this. You know, the adults are what bite us, the little jumping fleas. But they lay little round eggs that fall down on the ground and in cracks, even in your carpet. And then they hatch out in these tiny little – they're not caterpillars, they're not worms, but they're little grub-looking little things that eat decaying organic matter, dust, bits of dead grass. They chew on stuff like that. Then they go into a cocoon – and then they come out of that as the adults. So when you have adults, you can spray and kill a lot of adults. And if you spray good or put something down low, you can kill the larvae that are on the ground. But next week, some eggs are going to hatch out. And the next day, some cocoons are going to sprout out. So you're going to seem like you're not getting control. So the idea is to peter them out with two or three treatments a few days or a week or so apart. That way you'll control the insects that are present and their larvae, and you'll catch any that come out of cocoons after you sprayed, and you'll gradually peter them out. So two or three treatments a few days or a week or so apart is really what it takes. And keep in mind, you're also trying to control little small things if it's in the house, in your carpet, in the cracks, so sweep and mop and vacuum really good first. And that'll get rid of a lot of the eggs, cocoons, and the tiny little grubs. So it does help to understand that life cycle.
Oh, excellent. And my question was, how do I prevent them from even getting in here? You know,
you can't have you got squirrels in your yard?
Pardon me?
Do you have squirrels in your yard, in your trees?
Yes, sir. Plenty.
Well, you know, they sit up there and you see them scratching and it looks so cute. Well, they're scratching fleas. So squirrels, stray cats, the raccoons and possums and everything that comes by has got fleas on them. So really there's not any way to prevent it other than just, you know, keeping your grass cut. Sometimes I have problems with this. I spray two or three times a week apart. That wipes it out for the most part from then on. It can be really frustrating unless you understand you're trying to break a life cycle rather than one spray takes care of it. So, and what part of the north did you move from?
Oh, pardon me?
What part of the north did you move from?
West Johnson.
Wisconsin, go Bucky. Anyway,
well, they lost the nose bowl, so I'm not happy about that.
That's okay. One of our producers, Ezra Wall, just retired from MPB and went up to a manage a station in his hometown up in Wisconsin. Anyway, welcome. Don't let fleas put you off.
So, are you suggesting that I like treat the entire yard?
No, it's not. It's really not practical. But for the most part, you know, this is really frustrating. I get almost as many emails about this as anything else, and they come and they go. For the most part, about all you can do is try to keep them coming in your house. If you've got a kind of a spray, that if you're going to walk around the yard, this sounds terrible, but you could spray the lower part of your jeans and walk around, and they'll jump on you and kill themselves. It's a terrible sounding thing, but I don't know what else to do. I got fleas too. And I've got degrees degrees to study entomology.
It was awful last summer. I couldn't get rid of them for the life of me. And
there are some insecticides you can put out in the lawn, but it takes a lot of it over a long area, and it takes out what we call non-target things like worms and the good things too. So really, there's not a whole lot practical. Some years are going to be worse than others, and you know, that's the best I can do for right now. So anyway, good luck on it. Alrighty, folks, we're going to take a real quick break. We can come back with more of the Gestalt Gardener. Got time for some calls, and if you want to give us one. Otherwise, shoot me an email. I'm looking at one right now from an Angel Trumpet from Larry Simsky, who's calling from email from Ocean Springs. But if you want to shoot me an email, it's garden@mpbonline.org. We're going to take a real quick break and come back with more of the Gestalt Gardener right here on Mississippi Public Broadcasting. Stick with us.
Hey, this is Malcolm White with the Mississippi Arts Commission. I'm one of the hosts of the Mississippi Arts Hour, the arts interview show on Think Radio. Every week, myself or one of my fellow hosts bring you in-depth interviews with different creative Mississippians. We talk with visual artists, musicians, writers, as well as people who help bring the arts to their communities. We hear about how each artist learned their craft and get some insight into their creative process. You can hear the Arts Hour every Sunday at 5 p.m. on Think Radio, or listen anytime by subscribing to the show through your favorite podcast app.
All righty, folks, we're going to try again. Let's try a third time, see if we got Bill from Greenwood. Bill, you with us this time?
Yes, sir, Sir Felder. I'm right here.
All righty. What's up?
Did you have Aunt Mamie? Because I did.
I did. Aunt Mamie, yeah, I sure did, over in Sunflower County. She was a firecracker. She smoked cigarettes and cussed, too, but she was great.
Well, getting back to the tree, my mama and my sister were trying to chop this tree down, and they were all in the tree. And I came over from school, and I started helping them, and then we all fell out of the tree, and they fell on me, and I broke my ankle. So that was 8 years.
Anyway, I actually have an old plant pot that came from my Aunt Mamie. So anyway, what's going on? What can I help you with? Or you just wanted to talk about Aunt Mamie?
Yeah, well, when you brought up Aunt Mamie, I just remembered it. But no, I've got some blue bonnet seeds, and I think now is the time to plant them. Am I not right?
Blue bonnet. Yeah, blue bonnets, they really grow like clover stuff. That's better to plant it back in the fall. They sprout early, and they grow over the wintertime, and they bloom like in late March and April on what's already been growing out there. So if you hadn't planted them, I'd go ahead and get them out as soon as possible. But usually they're planted in the fall, sort of like weeds in the lawn. They come up in the fall, they bloom in the spring, and then they set seed and die.
Yeah, well, you know, someone told me to wait till around about February, but maybe I'm waiting too late. But, yeah, I'll try that, Felder. I've never had no luck. I guess it's going to be a bad luck year. with blue bottles.
Well, if you listen, I spent a lot of time in Texas. I do a lot of lectures and work. Got good friends over there. You don't see many blue bonnets even in East Texas. They grow in the really miserable, hard, alkaline limestone type, nothing prairie type stuff. When you get really good dirt that's moist and acidic, they just don't grow as well. You know, they grow best in just old Texas, Central Texas type of just alkaline dirt. So if you treat it good, it ain't gonna do well.
Would it help if I got some alkaline and mixed it in there to make it real alkaline, the soil?
Not really. You know, the ones you got now, you know, if you want to put a little bit of lime in with it, a little handful of lime, that'd be fine. But it takes lime a little while to start working. So anyway, the reason why we don't see a lot of bluebonnets here, because they like alkaline prairie type conditions. We have acidic woodland kind of conditions here in Mississippi.
Oh, okay.
So anyway, give it a try.
Okay. The other things that grow here, like lupines, don't they grow in Mississippi, lupines?
Well, you know, there are some lupines, and they get up, you know, they're not the great big pretty ones like you see wild all over England. I have pictures of them. They're chest high to me in England. But a bluebonnet is a type of lupine. They're real close related. But, there are some, but, again, they grow in not great dirt, if that makes sense. Where you see them blooming, they're going to be along a roadside. They got mowed in like an artificial prairie.
Okay.
Yeah. So, well,
all right,
anyway.
So yeah.
All righty. Good luck on it. Let me know how it works out. Okie dokie, folks. I think we're just about out of time. I'm not sure about that, but looks like we are. And if you want to talk during the week, shoot me an email, garden@mpbonline.org. I'll talk next week about the events coming up, and if you know some events I can help promote, shoot me an email. Meanwhile, keep in mind, gardening is a great comfort, and if you don't know how, start like a kid. Start small. Start with something easy. Build on success. I want to thank the folks at MPB, Java Chapman, and all the other folks for bringing us together. If you get a chance this week, the last week in January, first week in February, take a kid out to a garden center. Get them a sack of bulbs or some pansies or lettuce seeds or something, and show them how to do what we do best. And if you're not sure, join in with them. Let's all learn how to get dirty together. See y'all next week.